Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 37 of Season 3 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Duncan Shields of Chronologically Speaking.
Hello!
Welcome back. You know, I'm sure you were trying to figure out what Tony was saying yesterday when he was talking about a fire. You know, who knows? I don't know. What is he firing? Is he like, you know, coming in and saying, you're fired? Yeah. You know, or is he
pulling a Schwarzenegger? You're fired.
There you go. Exactly. So who knows? We'll have to wait and see. So this episode begins with Tony trying to get more friendly with the intruder. All right. And ends with Tony thinking that he possibly has the upper hand.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so as we ended yesterday's episode with Tony walking through the deserted 32nd floor looking for McClane or looking for whoever's there. He doesn't know who's there. And he started saying the fire. And he continues by saying, the fire has been called off, my friend. So, you see, he's trying to become friendly here. You know, he's trying to be nice.
He's doing that cliche, you know, the terrorist. You know, like he's got it with his, I guess, German accent, maybe Austrian, I'm not sure. But like his, you know, he's like, the fire has been called off, my friend. He's like just a shadow away from saying mein Freund or something. You know,
exactly.
Like it's good. It's great. It's great.
Exactly. Because no one is coming to help you. You might as well come out and join the others. Okay. So it's great because like he says it in a very, you know, calm way. He's trying to lull whoever it is that's there, you know, out. He's not expecting it to be someone who's armed. He's expecting that some guy just got away from the party, you know, and thought of the idea of pulling the fire alarm. You know, he doesn't really expect any confrontation here. You know, he feels very safe in everything that's going along. You know, he's cautious, but he's looking around cautiously about everything, but he still feels safe.
He thinks it's some soft executive who's like cowering somewhere or something.
Yeah. Now, what's great is he says, you might as well come out and join the others. And then we see him cock his gun.
Well, so, he says, you know, he cocks his gun right after he says, oh, no, he cocks his gun and then has the audacity to say,
I promise I won't hurt you.
Like, okay.
Yeah, I believe you.
Believe you. Exactly. What's the Anchorman gif? I don't believe you.
Exactly. But I mean, first of all, I've handled many guns in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been in situations where you're walking into an area where you might need to walk in with a gun with a bullet in the chamber. Okay. Uh-huh. So you're not cocking the gun at this point. He should have cocked the gun beforehand. So this is done for an effect.
Get that. Yeah.
It's done as an effect, but if he already walked into this room, you know, if he was a real professional, he would already have had the bullet in the chamber when he was getting out of the elevator, and then he'd walk around. But we don't know that, so he has to tell us, you know, that by cocking the gun.
It's like the pulling back of the hammer in a Western or racking the shotgun. You know, it's like these are all things you should have done already.
Exactly.
You know, you're in the situation now. Don't do it halfway through your monologue. You know, like.
Right.
Especially because it betrays the utter lies that you're telling in this
Correct.
Particular.
Especially when you say, "I promise I won't hurt you." I won't hurt you, but I've just cocked my gun.
You might know this. Is this good? Does he have good trigger discipline here? Because his finger is pretty much on the trigger all the time, and I think you're supposed to have it like not on the trigger.
Well, again, you're not supposed to, depending on the situation that you're walking into. You know, if you're walking into a situation where you're about to fire, you want to have your finger on the trigger.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
You know, you don't want to, the safety measure of not having your finger on the trigger is when you're in an area in a situation where you don't expect to use your gun. He's expecting to use his gun right now. And he doesn't want to lose that fraction of a second by having to, you know, put his finger into the trigger guard in order to shoot.
One thing I did read in connection to this film was that most of the shots with the firearms, the team of the, you know, the thieves or terrorists or whatever you want to call them, the Hans Gruber's men have excellent trigger discipline throughout the film. But there's like some armed, you know, people that are experts at such things were looking at the movie going, yeah, they actually, you know, either have training or were trained properly for the film because their trigger discipline is actually pretty good.
I mean, there are a lot of movies that they take their time to make sure that, that the actors, you know, portray handling of weapons properly.
There's the famous, like, when you're not used to it, apparently a lot of actors will make gun noises with their mouths.
Well, you had that with the Star Wars movies where, where they're all making lightsaber sounds, you know. Like, vroom,
vroom, you know, exactly. Or like, you know, you're firing your gun, you're like, you know, pew, 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 or you're like.
Exactly. You know, they have to cut all that out post-production.
You have to be told a few times. Like, the actors are like, okay, you're making gun sounds with your mouth. You have to stop. Okay, I'm sorry. And then they're like, cut. You just did it again. And they're like, what? I did? Oh, geez. Like, they have to really concentrate to not make gun sounds.
That's an easy way to get fired. You know.
Yeah, no doubt.
You didn't do that during mesh runs, did you?
No, I didn't. I was a minor tunneling underneath the school. I don't think I had to handle any firearms.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fine. So, yeah. I mean, the way that he says, I promise I won't hurt you, you know, he's not believable at all.
No.
Because he also is like smirking as he says it too. You know, like, we see his face. I promise I won't hurt you.
Yeah. He's just a second away from going, you know, like, you're not telling the truth, sir.
No. And then he's standing there in front of this stack. Now, this is the same stack that we saw McLean behind yesterday. So you wanted to talk about yesterday, about what that stack is. What is that stack?
My belief is that it's a stack of drywall.
That is correct.
Right, that's what now, I see also. You've got the metal struts where they put up all the you know, wiring, I guess, or whatever, and the light switches, and then you put the drywall up around it. So this is, they're running around the skeleton of the floor. None of these shiny metal struts, I think, are load bearing, but they're there to where that's where the walls are going to go. So it's like the skeleton of the floor.
Right. Okay. So what do you know about drywall?
I've got friends who are experts at it, so I've picked up a little bit of knowledge.
Like, so I chose the wrong person to be on today's episode. We should have invited your friends.
I've got friends who could talk for hours about drywall. I know that it goes up quick, but it has to be done properly, and that it can be repaired. Some, you know, it can be spot repaired easily, but if there's too much damage, it really all needs to be taken down. And I know that it's relatively recent invention, and I might be wrong, but that's what I think. And the person who made it is vastly wealthy. The person who came up with drywall, and I think drywall is made out of gyprock. I might be wrong.
You're close.
Okay. So, you take me through it, because I think I just exhausted all of my drywall.
So do you know any other names for drywall?
Sheetrock? No, okay. I don't know.
Yes, sheetrock.
Is that one of them? Oh, great.
Yeah, that is one of them. Okay, so drywall is also referred to as plasterboard, wallboard, sheetrock, gypsum board, buster board, custard board, or custard, a gypsum board. Panel.
Okay.
Right? It's a panel made of calcium sulfite dehydrate, which is known as gypsum. And it is typically used, extruded between thick sheets of facer and backer paper, used in the construction of interior walls and ceilings. The plaster is mixed with fiber, typically paper, glass wool, or a combination of these materials, plasticized, foaming agent, and the additives that can reduce mildew, flammability, and water absorption.
Yeah, very important.
Okay. Drywall construction has become very prevalent in North America because of its time and labor-saving alternative to using regular plaster, you know, for putting up walls. So the first plant was opened in 1888 in Rochester, Kent, England.
Oh, okay. Not to be confused with Rochester, New York.
Correct.
There's another Rochester.
That's right. So Sackett board was invented in 1894 by a man named Augustine Sackett and Fred Kane, who were graduates of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institution. Right. They basically were layering plaster with four plies of wool felt paper. The sheets were 36 by 36 by a quarter of an inch, you know, with open edges. So okay. Then they started using it more in like 1910 to 1930. They were wrapping the board edges and eliminating parts of the inner layers in order to and using paper-based facings on the inside.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, in 2002, there was apparently a cartel in Europe that was affecting 80% of the consumers in France, England, Germany, and all the Benelux countries because they were not creating good drywall. And
they were making tons of money.
They were making tons of money.
Hold on the market, but they were not creating. They were, it was not a good product.
Yeah, they were imposed fines of over 420 million euro at the time for everything that they were doing because you know the idea is trying to make things more fire resistant and you know more efficient, but apparently they were trying to find ways to make it a little bit more cheaper.
Sure. Cut corners at that volume and you're saving a lot of money. So
yeah, but completely.
I remember somebody telling me about when you mentioned Benelux, a lot of people get the Netherlands and Holland mixed up building. Is that, you know, and so you think, well, you got to remember, you know, Benelux is Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg. But if it was Holland, then it would be Beholux, which is
that's true.
You know, UK slang for balls. So it was a funny joke. That's how you know it's Benelux. That's how you know it's
as Bullocks.
The Netherlands. Right. It's not Holland. It's the Netherlands. Otherwise, it'd be Beholux.
There you go. That's great. So then Tony, you know, starts walking towards this pile of sheetrock. Right now, why do you think he suspects that that's where the intruder is hiding?
Well, this is like that old Monty Python sketch, you know, how to not be seen in nature, you know? And so, however, he has chosen an obvious hiding spot. You know, like you've got one bush in the middle of nowhere. It appears like this is the stack of drywall for this room.
Yes.
And that's, you know, where else could he possibly be hiding?
That's right. So Tony continues and he quickly maneuvers himself around the entire stack and with no hesitation whatsoever, he just opens fire. You know, again, I promise I won't hurt you.
Oops, my gun misfired.
Yeah. Sorry. And then he shoots a quick burst right into that area. And we get to see, you know, we think that McLean is still there. Just like a few weeks ago, we thought McLean was still in the office when they were coming to check. You know, we did, you know, they were able to give him those few seconds to run across with nobody hearing him. You know, because, you know, you don't make noise when you're barefoot.
Everyone knows that.
In an office building that's partially carpeted. So who knows? And then he quickly hears this. He turns because he hears the sound of machinery.
You know, to get back to the sound here. I like the sound when Tony fires at the ground.
Yeah.
This sounds like not just a canned sound effect. It sounded like it was made custom for the film because it's got a really nice – it's compact. It sounds like it's inside the room. It's not just like, you know, submachine gun sound effect number 26 off a disc somewhere.
Right.
It's got a real – it's very punchy and it doesn't just have the, you know – pew, 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 the kind of like, you know, ricochet, the sort of cliche ricochet sound effect that you would hear whining off of the concrete that he's firing at. You know, you just hear a really good, it sounds like a very powerful gun in an enclosed area, kind of like the firefight in Heat, right? They kept all the ambient sound of the echoes because otherwise, I mean, and that way it just adds all this realism to it. Although I will say opening up that close onto a concrete floor sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah, completely. Especially, we get to see all the sparks that are flying when he's shooting. You know, the pyrotechnic crew got some work ahead of them there for that one.
Yeah,
no question about that. And you know, then we hear the sound of machinery that he quickly looks to the other side because he's distracted by it. Right, we're not sure what it is. He looks off to the right. And then we see that he starts to walk in that direction, and then he starts to like speed up. He begins to trot and, you know, starts moving a little faster in order to get there. I love his 80s glasses also. You know,
Oh
he's got
yeah,
like
great
these
glasses.
huge glasses that, you know, you think that, you know, so he tries to figure out where this, you know, machinery noise is coming from. And then he reaches a point where he sees, you know, he sees something spinning. And the you know the dial, you know, starts slowing down at that point when he's looking at it, right? So Tony comes to a halt and he's ready for something, but he sees nothing there going on. And then he looks to the left, trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe there's someone down the corner, down around the corner or around the corridor or something like that. And at this point, he thinks that maybe he found someone again, so he takes another stance, you know, as if he's ready to fire on somebody. And you know, the saw blade is it's great the way they show it to us that
Yeah.
you know that's just slowing down. Now, I've always wondered until I thought about it this time watching this, you know, what exactly is happening here? You know, so you know, McClane must have, you know, pressed a button to turn on the saw in order to distract Tony a bit, right? But
Yeah.
these saws probably have like what you would call a dead man switch. You know, that if you're not holding something down, you know, it's not going to work. So that's why it turns off so quickly.
Well, I've used them and they've got like a throttle, right? Like the trigger to turn it on and off. Like you can turn it on and just say, okay, go, right? And then run all your boards through it because you need both your hands. But there is a trigger that you can just like goose, right? To turn to like rear rear kind of rev the blade as you're feeding stuff through it.
Yeah, but I doubt McClane knows about that.
Well, it's like the trigger of a gun. It's the trigger on the blade. So if you just
Right.
go over there and give it a quick pulse, it's going to go vroom, and then wind itself down.
Okay. All right, that
And
makes sense.
I think that's what he did.
Okay.
Although
So,
it does go for a while, so maybe I'm wrong. But that was in
right.
my head,
Or
that was
maybe
all
he
in
was
my head.
holding it down for a little while and then when he heard Tony coming, he let go. And that's where it
Yeah.
stopped. You know, that
Yeah,
could be also.
that's always been my headcanon for what's going on here.
Right. So we actually can see the as the blade is slowing down, we can actually see the company that makes this saw. And there's
Yeah,
like a
yeah.
little sign there that says, you know, first of all, it says DeWalt saws.
The one and only DeWalt. Very,
Yeah.
very, like right up there with Black and Decker.
Right. And then we see it says 12 inches, 300 millimeter blade, 4 inches, 102 millimeter cut.
So those are all the measurements of that particular blade.
Yeah,
I'm not
do you know
sure what
when
DeWalt.
the DeWalt? I couldn't figure out what the model was of that, and I
No,
tried.
I couldn't get the model either. But I imagine it's like a portable job site table saw. So it's not one that's bolted in place. It's one that you can sort of put in an elevator and take up to where you need it. So
Right.
I assume that because of the requirements of the different specific jobs out there, that it is adjustable in a lot of different respects. So it might not be a specific model. It's kind of like, well, what do you need it to be? Like you
Right. Okay, that
set it
makes
up the
sense.
way you want it.
Right. So do you know what year the company was founded? The
I
DeWalt
don't.
company?
No.
So the company was started in 1923 by Raymond E. DeWalt,
I didn't realize it was that old. That's awesome.
who was the inventor of the radial arm saw.
What?
Yes.
So, oh, they were like the OG radial arm saws. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they were sold to Black and Decker in 1960, which is why they are now they're a subsidiary of Black and Decker.
So they still have the DeWalt name, but they're a subsidiary of Black and Decker. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So I found it to be really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I kind of wish it was the other way around, but I wish that the DeWalt's actually the shadow company behind Black and Decker. That would have been pretty cool. But
Yeah.
well, I it always makes me a little sad when I hear about these, really old historically relevant companies that ended up getting sold to Coca-Cola or
Exactly.
whatever. And I'm like, ah, shoot. Well, I'm glad their name is still around, but it's like they're a ghost or something.
Right. That's true. So Tony seems flabbergasted because he's not really sure what to think here. You know, like what's going on? What's this? You know, why is this radial arm blade going or whatever? And the music gets even more tense as
yeah,
it goes
good
up.
music, yeah.
Yeah. And then quickly we see that McClane shows up and pushes his gun right into Tony's left ear, right below Tony's left ear.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Drop it, dickhead. It's the police." And Tony goes, "You won't hurt me." And he says, "Oh, yeah? Why not?" And he goes, "Because you're a policeman."
Yeah.
And then we don't get the rest of that line there. You know, well, tomorrow we'll have to hear the rest of that line. But I wanted to actually first focus on, you know, on McClane's first line where he says, "Drop it, dickhead." Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it made me think, okay, what is, where does the term dickhead come from?
Okay.
Yeah. You know? So it's, I found this in the Urban Dictionary. Right. So it's a vulgar slang, a stupid, contemptible or annoying man.
Sure.
Example they give here is Grace took me aside. "Hey," she said, "I think Eunice has some real problems." "Duh," I said. "Her father's a dickhead." Whatever. That's right. Just, you know, the first known use of the term dickhead came in 1960. Okay.
Right.
And I found in another place there two definitions of the term. So number one is someone who treats people unfairly for little or no reason.
Okay.
That makes sense, right? And the second one just made me laugh, and it's going to make everyone laugh when they're listening to this. It's a person with a penis on their head.
Okay.
Fairly, I don't know.
Fairly literal.
I don't know why that's in a, you know, that's in the dictionary. I wouldn't think that people would be that literal by that. If you call someone a dickhead, that's where it would come from.
100% assume that it is 100% a metaphor. I would never say.
No, not at all.
No.
Yeah.
You know, but when I picture, you know, like when I think, there's a Latin saying, penis erectus non compos mentis, which means an erect penis knows no conscience, or an erect penis knows no mind.
Okay.
So when I think of that kind of, you know, when you call someone a dickhead, it's like they're in that, you know, that state.
Yes.
You know, that kind of idiotic, you know, one track mind state, with all of the sort of inherent blindness that comes with it. So if somebody's a dickhead, they're not that bright, and they're probably arrogant, belligerent, stubborn, and you know, driven. So that would that's what I assume. And also, like when you've got the head of a dick, the head of a person, you know, there's that synonym, you know, head in both cases. So it's kind of just and it's, I guess it's fun to say dickhead, you know, it's
kind of
saying with, you know, what's his face with the seven, George Carlin, when he's like, well, you know, I would take motherfucker out, but the rhythm of it really works for the list, you know, and it's like,
exactly.
Dickhead is another one.
Yeah.
You know, it's why it's not, you know, you don't call someone a penis head or something, because that's not, you know, that sounds weird.
Yeah.
You know? So
exactly.
Dickheads go.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, I mean, Tony sounds pretty naive by saying this, you know, that
well,
even in the 1980s, by saying, "You're not going to hurt me because you're a policeman," you know, doesn't he know what's going on in the 80s? There was a lot of police brutality, you know, not just in LA, but other places. So,
yeah, but as a child in the 80s, the archetype of officer friendly was still, you know, in full effect. You know, like, it wasn't until sort of the L.A. riots that we really got, like, to me anyway, as an adult, started to understand that maybe the cops on the whole as an organization have a problem. It's not just like, I was like, most cops would welcome an investigation by internal affairs because they all want to be good people and arbiters of justice. You know, like, that was my, you know, growing up, I'm like, that's what cops are.
And that's what Mounties are. You're in Canada.
Yeah.
They're the Mounties.
There's a cop. Of course, and there's some that have, of course, succumbed to the temptation and the relentless violence that they see day in, day out, and now they're, stealing money or whatever. But that's not all of them, and now, but now I'm, I'm like, there's a lot wrong with the institution, and so, when he's like, because you're a policeman, and I love how words like that sound. In the mouths of people that, English isn't their first language, it becomes so much more literal. You're not just a policeman, you're like a policeman. It's almost like a superhero title or something. They become, that is the profession, the literal profession. He is a policeman. And I like the way he says it. But it is probably naive, but it's what they're depending on as well. I mean, I think for the 80s, I don't know. It doesn't strike me as super naive. It just strikes me as a little naive. American cops were at that point, I think, still being held up as a cliche pinnacle of law and order. That there was things that they, it's the good guy never kills. It's the bad guy who kills. The good guys send the bad guys to prison. Like that sort of. That's
That's
what the
fair.
cliche was still in full effect. I thought it was eroded and it was starting to fall apart, but yeah, you're right. It's probably not a naive thing for him to say.
That's fair. So
Or maybe, but also maybe he's just trying to draw, talk more, don't pull the trigger, talk more,
That's true also. So the script has a few little minor discrepancies, not that many. First of all, instead of him cocking the gun, it says that he fingers the trigger of his machine gun, meaning that in the script, he already has a bullet in the chamber.
Yeah,
At this
good, smart.
point, makes a little more sense. They refer to the saw as a radial arm saw that's spinning noisily. And then it says Tony grins at his own nervousness. He moves to turn it off, not realizing the sound has buried the soft rustle of McLean stepping into a frame behind him. McLean shoves
That
his
makes
pistol
oh.
barrel against Tony's temple.
That makes way more sense.
Of course. And then it says McLean says, "Freeze, police, don't move or name your beneficiary."
What? Okay, I'm glad they changed that. That's what a
I
that's
can't
a
imagine
nonsense.
Bruce Willis saying that,
Yeah.
and then it says Tony doesn't. McLean cocks his Beretta. Tony watches him calmly. So again, he puts the gun to his forehead, but he doesn't. He didn't cock the gun beforehand.
Yeah.
So I
Yeah.
don't know.
I like there is something to be said for the sound of it. I remember police ran past me once responding to a robbery that was happening in my area, and one of them was carrying a shotgun, and he did the old, like racked the shotgun as he was running past me, responding to the robbery. And I've heard that sound 900 times in a movie, but that was the first time I'd heard it in like real life beside me, and my knees went weak and my blood went cold. I was like, okay, all right, okay, all right, okay, like, and so if somebody's got a gun to your head, you're like, okay, but then you hear the gun cock, you're like, oh, okay, this is real. So there's a I think there's a kind of an auditory trigger to it too. If you really want to scare the person that you're drawing down on, that sound goes a long way.
Correct.
I did. Sorry, I know we've got it rated in, but I also want to say that Tony doesn't know about McLean's cloak of invisibility. Because I don't know, like at this point in this, throughout this movie, McLean pulls some straight up ninja antics. And this is one of those scenes where I'm like, he just like disappears. And then just reappears. I'm like, you don't skitter around the floor there and turn on saws and then get the drop on guys. Like that, this is plainly impossible what happens in this scene. It's like you said, he took off his socks, so now he's like the wind, of course.
Of course.
It doesn't work like that. But that's why I like in the script, it was the sound of the saw that covered up McClane's approach.
Yes. That's true. Okay, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where either myself or my guest will give a little story about an adventure or misadventure that has happened to one of us that's somehow related to a holiday. So, Duncan, you got a story for us?
I do. One funny story that happened to me a couple years ago was that Easter happened to fall on April Fool's Day. This doesn't happen very often, but Easter took place on April the 1st. So that year for our daughter, the Easter bunny decided to hide a whole bunch of vegetables and cans of soup around the house and in the baskets instead of chocolate.
Oh, wow.
So he hid some chocolates here and there as well, but there are also a lot of carrots, red peppers, broccoli, and stuff like that. So
how old was she at the time?
Very hilarious that year. How old would have been 8, I think.
So did she get it?
Eight or seven.
Did she get it?
Did she get the joke?
Yeah.
Like, she thought the joke was hilarious, and she thought that the Easter Bunny was playing a wonderful prank. So she was all in on that.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
All right. Great story. Thank you.
It was a gamble, but it was very funny. We all had a really really good laugh. It was a wonderful opportunity. Like, it's falling on April 1st. We got to do something, you know. And that was good.
Oh wow, great story. Thank you very much for that. So Duncan, you want to once again tell people where they can find you?
You can go to buyduncanshields.com. It's a skeleton of a website, but it's still active. I got to update it and make it look better. You can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at buyduncanshields, like B-Y Duncan Shields, S-H-I-E-L-D-S. Or like I said, go to chronologicallyspeaking.com or go to timebanditsminute.com.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can find me very simply by doing a search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, or you can go directly to my website. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.